We love the Greenbrier. I think it gives us an opportunity to get away and just kind of be on our own out here, develop some chemistry. Greenbrier people are awesome. Really great hospitality. Can't say enough about how they treat us here. And facilities are great. Field looks great. So we're excited to be here. Had a good spring. Good player. Really solid player. You know, smart guy. Good instincts. Good ball skills. Yeah, we're excited to have him. I like what he brings to the table.
I'm not going to lie, that very last part, if I didn't know that O'Brien was talking about Tyrann Mathieu, I may not have guessed based on exactly what he said.
Maybe, he said ball skills. He said instincts.
Yeah. And then he talked about how he was a new addition. But the other stuff was like good, solid player, smart, generic compliments.
What are you going to do? Go over the top and gush over every single guy? Got to earn it.
What if O'Brien was like, you know what? He looks great. I predict he will be an all pro.
He'll be, you know Bill O'Brien, how much he loves getting into those things.
Yes.
I was watching some Tyrann Mathieu just to kind of remind myself of the really good stuff. But I wanted to watch from last year because, as many people have pointed out, he had a good, solid, getting back into it type of season last year after dealing with injuries for a couple years. 2015 was his magnificently electric year. But he had some really good moments last year. Mm. But even in those moments, a couple of his interceptions, one against the Bears, one against the Colts, you could see that even after he made nice plays on the ball, I don't think he had that same pop to his movement that classic Honey Badger had. And he's talked about that. He's been very open about the fact that he was maybe a half step behind,
yeah,
and that he feels like he's regained it this offseason. I'm very, very interested in just watching him in the first preseason game or whenever he plays for the first time, even if he doesn't make a big play, just kind of to see how... See how his joints are, see how he's popping around down the field. Does he look like that same old guy?
He had a ridiculous interception against the Jaguars last season that helped the Cardinals win. And it was one of those plays where Blake Bortles is rolling to the sideline. You're not 100% sure what he's going to do because maybe he can turn the ball upfield. And I'm actually watching the
Bortles
highlight
just
right
threw
now.
That one right to him. I didn't think that was as amazing an interception.
I was impressed because he ran all the way over to that side of the field and he was like 5 yards away from Bortles. Uh-huh. And I was just impressed that he was all the way over
there.
He
covered so much ground to get
right
over there.
And on top of that,
he was lined up, rotated over there to start with or anything.
If a quarterback's throwing a pass and he's that close to you and you're able to make a catch on a pass that's thrown that close
to
you.
The point blank range aspect.
Right, like
of
that,
it
was, yeah, it was pretty impressive.
Those ball skills, right. Yeah, there's a certain knack he has for making plays on the ball. And that's what I saw last year with a lot of his interceptions. I'm not knocking him for making that play. It's that he has that ability to be in the right spot at the right time. Yep. I think what some people call instinct is just more flat out football IQ. And that's what's exciting about him being more of a full-time safety. And maybe he can't cover the slot the way he used to. It doesn't matter if he can provide those game-changing plays as a safety and kind of use that football IQ and his ability to diagnose and read and get into passing lanes and show up. Ted had said what? That he put the over-under on game-ending plays at 2.5?
Yes. Now, it may have been shooting pretty high, but basically Ted's whole thing was that, like, Honey Badger's the kind of guy who makes plays to finish off games, a fumble recovery, an interception, a big sack that really kills a drive or puts the other team in a really bad situation. He set the over on 2.5. That's a lot just because, you know, I mean, you might win like 10 or 11 games in a good year, right? And of those games, he has to basically make that play 20% of the time.
It takes
that's
a lot.
Lot.
I think that takes luck. There's a certain amount of luck involved
in that. No question. There's no question.
Because, okay, let's say in a good season, if you win 10 or 11 games, probably 4 or 5 of those games are going to be with your offense on the field, just closing it out, or you're up by 2 touchdowns or whatnot. So that only leaves you 5 or 6 close games. And then you got to spread it out among Clowney, J.J. Watt, Tyrann Mathieu.
Yep.
But it is, yes, it's indeed possible. I wouldn't put the over-under at 2.5, because that would mean that there might be, if you're going to put the over-under at 2.5, that means that he could conceivably be like 4 or 5 game-winning plays also. I don't quite see that happening.
It may have been shooting a little bit high. I wonder what the realistic expectations, I don't know why I can't say realistic this morning, but what the realistic expectations are for Mathieu this season. This is something that I'm not necessarily as high on Brian Gain as some people are on this radio station. Not that I'm down on him, but because we just need to wait and see.
I don't know how you can have any opinion on Brian Gain right now.
Fair
Who's
enough.
High on him?
Landry is just, Landry's raving about it in the loops, raving about him. They're convinced he's the next, like, I don't know, Ron Wolf.
I'm just really?
Yeah.
Based off of what?
I don't know. The way he talks, the moves he's made.
He doesn't say anything.
Yeah, I'm not like,
what a terrible take.
I think, like, Brian Gain, when any GM would be the first one to tell you, like, look, grade me 3 years down the road after some of these moves either have or have not panned out.
This was my favorite move of the offseason because it's the kind of move the Houston Texans as a franchise rarely ever make. That they go and get a guy for a year who's a good veteran player who, if this guy hits, could be part of the long-term future of this team, or let's say like the medium-term future of this team, but they rarely make moves like this where you're like, well, why don't they bring in this guy for a year? Why don't they bring in that guy for a year? He's exciting. If he bounces back and continues to bounce back, he can really help your football team. He's got attitude. He's got aggressiveness. They haven't usually done this kind of thing. This was my favorite move of the offseason.
Who has a bigger impact on his team's fate this year? Matthew or Maldonado?
Martin Maldonado, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I love the move. This was my favorite move of the Brian Gain so far era.
I think my favorite move is still Aaron Colvin, and I just feel that this is such a high upside move, and I feel that also he's the kind of player that could potentially by the end of the season be someone who's overtaken Jonathan Joseph and overtaken Kevin Johnson as both of the top two corners on this team. I hope that that's what ends up happening. I am just as speculative on that as the In the Loop crew is on Brian Kane's general managing acumen.
But if you're bullish on him, you're bullish on him.
Right.
But Colvin, the big question mark is how is he going to be on the outside? I mean, there's just a huge difference between playing slot corner, especially. I can't overstate how much it helps to have two of the best young cornerbacks in the league on your team. Like, Aaron Colvin was playing slot cornerback when he had two close to lockdown/lockdown corners in A.J. Boye and Jalen Ramsey. That makes life a whole lot easier. Now, not only are you taking that away from him, you have exactly the opposite situation in a lot of respects. He doesn't have a whole lot of support in the among other cornerbacks, and he's also potentially playing on the outside. That's probably the biggest swing for me. There's part of me that's nervous that the Colvin addition might really go down in flames. At which point, that would make Brian Gain a horrendous GM. If we're going to judge him by Aaron Colvin, that has the most boomer bust potential, I think.
In flames, huh? You know what? I can't disagree, Seth, with the substantive points that you brought up.
Yeah.
I mean, he's playing. I mean, he. And this is not anti-Aaron Colvin, but damn, it helps a lot when you've got two of the very best cornerbacks in the NFL. And just everything Jacksonville had on defense, Ngakoue, Campbell, Miles Jack, Telvin Smith, all these different guys, he was playing on such a loaded unit that now you take him and now he's going to, now there's going to be more of a spotlight. Now teams will be able to attack him more on the outside.
Matt Weston from Battle Red Blog, who we all enjoy a lot, he had a tweet yesterday. Did it catch your attention, Paul?
It caught Mike's attention.
I 100% believe Watson will be great in the long term, but is going to be worse this year than he was last year. And the Texans' season depends on the health of its pass rush. This is a question I'd have, because I know, Matt, it's not like that's an anti-Watson take at all. But I wonder, is it he's going to be worse, or that the numbers could not be quite as impressive, but that doesn't mean he's worse. You know, like, I'd say that with J.J. Watt some years. When he had 20-plus sacks, the next year, if he has 15 sacks, he could play exactly the same way. It's just the stats aren't quite as good. So Watson was throwing touchdowns at a rate the likes of which nobody's ever finished a complete NFL season. So do you expect him to come in and throw 45 touchdowns? And if he doesn't, then it's a worse performance. I don't buy that.
I think the odds of him having as many big plays this season as he did last year, you would think it would be low, because it felt, just compared to every single season I've ever watched of Texans football, like every single one of those years of Texans football I had watched combined didn't have that many big plays as we saw over that 5 to 6 week stretch.
Right.
With Will Fuller touchdowns, with DeAndre Hopkins catching and running on screen passes for a bazillion yards. So I think from that perspective, that number, you should probably see less big time plays. But that said, with Will Fuller, his speed, and with Watson's ability to extend plays, they should continue in some regard, assuming that Fuller catches the ball, and he did have a pretty good season when it came to catching last year. I can see where he's coming from, though, because I think a lot of people assume when you have a stretch that is that good, and you're a young player, you also will have a stretch where you are that bad.
The sophomore slump is largely a myth. I think a lot of times it's they've broken this down statistically, and some guys take a step back, especially if they have brilliant first years. Some guys don't. Russell Wilson and his steady progression over his first few years had a couple things helping him. One, a very, very good defense. Two, an extremely good rushing attack. Deshaun Watson doesn't have a great rushing attack except for Deshaun Watson's contributions to it. So, like, when the Texans lead the league in rushing while he's in, that's largely because of Deshaun Watson. He's not the recipient of a Marshawn Lynch. The defense is a question mark at this point. I think a lot of Deshaun Watson's success this year will go by how well the defense is. How much do they help him out? What kind of field position do they have? And if the defense is struggling and it's all on Deshaun Watson's shoulder, then maybe, yeah, he takes a step back. But I think it ends up being more of, if not the same prodigious offensive numbers, still damn good football. It's hard to keep up that ridiculous rate of last year.
Ever since Deshaun played that game against New England, when I said yesterday he became Deshaun Watson, the hard thing to really let it sink in is, if you look at those five games, New England, Tennessee, Kansas City, Cleveland, and Seattle, those five games, those were all winning performances offensively. A lot of people who are critics will like to say, well, Watson only went 3-3. Well, that's fine, but Watson's most impressive performances last year came in losses against New England and against Seattle, obviously. So they did not have, after the Cincinnati game, they did not have one performance where you're like, man, the offense just didn't do enough to win this game. We have yet to see Watson do that ever since he became Deshaun Watson.
Well, and it's important to note that, he went 3-3 as a rookie quarterback on a team that only won one other game without him.
That's also a very good point.
It's not like he took a 14-2 team and only drove him to a 3-3 record. It was Deshaun Watson, and then obviously a whole bunch of other injuries.